So I'd like to read the case first. The instruction. Before the breakthrough, it's like standing before silver mountains and iron walls. After the breakthrough, the self is intrinsically an iron wall and a silver mountain. Should there be someone who asks how it is, I would turn to him and say, even if, right here, you can reveal an activity and see through a circumstance and cut off the main crossing through sitting, thereby preventing passage to ordinary and holy, this is not yet beyond the inherent capability. If, however, it is not yet like this, observe well how it is with the ancient. The case. A monk asked Joshua, the ultimate way is not difficult. It simply detests choosing. What is non-choosing? Joshua said, above the heavens and under the heavens. I am the only one, alone and exalted. The monk said, that is still choosing. Joshua said, you stupid bumpkin, where is the choosing? The monk remained silent. The verse. As deep as the sea, as hard as a mountain, mosquitoes and gnats play with the fierce wind of emptiness. Ants and termites shake the iron pillar. Picking and choosing a cloth drum hanging under the eaves. Okay, Blue Cliff Record is where case number 57 is from. I've got here a book from a translation of Thomas Clearly. I'll get to that in a second. So Engo wrote the instruction and Satcho compiled the book and wrote the verse. and let's just go through the instruction. Before the breakthrough, it's like standing before silver mountains and iron walls. So obviously, before a breakthrough implies before we have seen the world of oneness, before Kensho. While we're still stuck in the world of duality, in the prison, if you like, of duality. So the question that arises when I read that before the breakthrough, and some of you are still in that stage, why? You know, why am I still stuck there? Why can't I go through? And also how? How am I gonna go through? And of course that is the Zen journey. You know, understanding the why, seeing the points that prevent me from breaking through, and then how do I go through it? And usually, you know, we refer to these things in our Dharma talks. But a little bit just on that, just to clarify that. So why am I still stuck there? And the reason is because of my hindrances, because of the hindrances that I have created. And the biggest hindrance, of course, is what we call our self, our ego self. I've created this identity that is separate from everything else. I was born free of it, baby. And then as I grew up, I developed all these different ways to discriminate. I had to. That's how I could make myself known. The baby cries and mom arrives. Oh, there's someone there. Crying equals food. You know. So it starts off right there. And it developed, you know, this self developed, this identity developed depending on circumstances. Very simple. And those circumstances, they can be wholesome, unwholesome, skillful, unskillful. They can be so varied that they in many ways determine who we are right now. Well, in all ways, they determine who we are or who we think we are right now. That's it. Who we think we are right now is nothing but a continuous chain of circumstances, one after another arising. And what we've learned throughout the way we've adopted as real We decided that's the way it is, because that is how this is how we conditioned ourselves to operate and to function. And of course, that's completely natural. So the hindrances come in, and the Buddha discovered the hindrances as that he discovered that that is actually that those hindrances or that identity that I have created, you know, is what stops us from seeing the original baby that we were born as, that original nature that we all possess as babies or as, you know. And in our practice, you know, relating it to our practice, those hindrances he identified very clearly, you know, as number one, sensual desire. I mean, he categorized them into five, but I mean, there are many more, but you can put many of those categories in there. So when we are sitting here, what hinders us from letting go and just seeing that world of oneness, the sensual desire arises. So sensual desire is anything to do with the senses. Oh, I'd love a cup of tea. You know, that's sensual desire. Anything to do with, you know, the way we operate through our senses. What's that smell? Can I smell smoke? Oh, I hope there's no fire out there. Crash! Oh my God, imagine that tree if that would have fallen on me. Yeah. So the hearing, you know, all this sensual desire, you know, that is related to that. Ill will is another one, another hindrance. I can't let go. Oh, what that person did to me or said to me, I can't let go. It sticks. It sticks in the bucket. It's right there. I haven't let it go yet. It can linger for years. Ill will. Simple. Sloth and torpor. I like that one, as you know. Sloth and torpor. Sometime at home, you know, when we are a bit lazy, I say, come on, Diana, let's not be slothish and torporish, you know. Sloth and torpor. It's like that no energy. Like, okay, we can do so many things. You know, like, oh, I don't want to move anymore. I've had enough. You know, anything but this, you know. Sloth and torpor, you know. Tired, ambivalent, you know. All these things, you know, come into it, sloth and torpor. Restlessness. Sitting is, oh, I need to do something. I don't want to sit, you know, that restlessness, that drive, that needing to be somewhere else, you know, restlessness. Continuously switching on the television or social media because we're restless. We don't want to be here. It's like I need to occupy myself all the time to be somewhere else because right here is so boring. I don't want to be here. I want to be in Bali or I want to be on the dance floor or I always want to be somewhere else, you know, restlessness. You know, remorse, doubt, and skepticism come into that as well. Remorse, doubt, and skepticism. Okay. So this is the why that, in other words, that's why we cannot break through, because those hindrances are there and we give in to those. And so we don't reflect, we don't reflect back on us, as in let them go in order to see beyond that. So how do we go beyond that? One simple thing, renunciation. And our practice on the cushion is a practice of renunciation. As you know, I keep on saying it, but it didn't come from me. It came from the Buddha. You know, the Buddha discovered that renouncing other, in other, renouncing all those hindrances, no matter what arises, sloth or torpor, ill will, renouncing other is opening the hole in the bucket, making sure that it's wide open, and let nothing stick. That is renunciation. Letting go is renunciation. You know? So that is how. You know, how am I doing it? Very simple, through renunciation. Now, of course, the monks, they were trained, you know, to do that in a very, very hardcore way. You leave home, for starters, you renounce your family life. You live in poverty, as in nothing to get attached to money-wise or materially-wise, you know, that is a very hardcore renunciation. You know, over the years, you know, as Buddhism has developed, especially in China and in Zen, and especially right now here in the West, you know, we do the renunciation in the context of our life. But of course, it can never be as hardcore as a monk or a nun in a monastery setting. Actually, our renunciation is much tougher, you know, because we renounce it within the context, you know, of all the goodies that tempt us. So it is, in a way, it is much harder, you know. But nevertheless, we do our best, we try, and we try and renounce. You know, we try and renounce. And the more, you know, the more I look at renunciation, the more I see how difficult it is. You know, a simple thing like going on a diet is really difficult. To renounce food, or to renounce chocolate, or to renounce, you know, a beer, whatever it is, you know, not easy. So renunciation is true. So before a breakthrough, so these are the things, before a breakthrough, it's like standing before a silver mountain and an iron walls. It's like, oh, you know, it seems like it's not possible. How can I do that, you know? That it's like, it seems impossible. But actually, it's just a flick of a switch. It's just like, it's all it takes. But no way, not with me. It's no way. I make it much more complicated than that. You know, we make it so complicated, and yet it is so easy. So before, oh, sorry, after the breakthrough, then it goes on. After the breakthrough, the self is intrinsically an iron wall and a silver mountain. And what jumps out here is the self is. The self is. You know, that's all. The self is. When you get into that, the self is just being. When we touch on being, nothing else is needed. I mean, what else can we be except for being? And when I get in touch with being, is, isness, sometimes it's, when I get in touch with is, the self is, it's obvious that I am that I'm the iron wall myself, because it is. It's just is. The self is. Cecily always shared the story that when one of the practitioners died at Mountain Moon Zen, this was in the days when she was a student with Rosalind and Mervyn, that this person died, his name was Stephen, I believe, and Rosalind gave a eulogy. And all she said was, Stephen is. Stephen is. So, Stephen is. We are. I am. Yeah. As the Christian, in the Christian context, I am, you know, just that. So, after the breakthrough, the self is. The rest, like intrinsically an iron wall and a silver mountain, is actually not even necessary, because it follows. When you have is, like everything is, you know. So very powerful. The other way we can look at that, and that's the analogy that is often made, and I've made it myself before, is the ocean is the wave. The ocean is the wave, or the wave is the ocean. If we identify as the wave, we can't see the ocean. But the wave is the ocean. The wave is the ocean. And the ocean is the wave. One is a bit up there, fluttering around and ripply. The other one is deep. very deep. Nothing can disturb it. You know? And yet up the top, it's all storms and all sorts of things. People drown and all the drama that happens in the world is up the top. But it is. It's all. I can look at the wave and say, oh, that's a good wave to surf. But it's all. That is. The wave is the ocean. The wave is the ocean. Another way of saying it, every answer is the question. Every answer is the question. Every question is the answer. Every answer is the question. Every question is the answer. Okay, before the breakthrough, it's like standing before a silver mountain and iron wall. Engel writes, after the breakthrough, the self is intrinsically an iron wall and a silver mountain, intrinsically the ocean. Now, the last bit here, should there be someone who asks how it is, I would turn to him and say, even if right here you can reveal an activity and see through a circumstance and cut off the main crossing through sitting, thereby preventing passage to ordinary and holy, this is not yet beyond the inherent capability. This is clumsy English. This is not yet beyond the inherent capability. I looked at different translations of this, and really what they all, except for this translation, what they all say is forget that this is not, or forget the yet. It's like this is not beyond your ability. That's what this should say. This is not beyond your ability. Okay. So just let's look at that with that context in mind. So there's no even if. There's forget the even. So I'll go through that with that in mind. There's another translation here, but I don't think I need to read it. Okay. Should there be someone who asks how it is? Should there be someone who asks how it is? So how it is, like how it is when we have broken through. How it is when we have had awakening. Should there be someone who asks how it is? I would turn to him and say, if right here, again, it jumped at me, right here, you know, we say that so casually and for obvious reason. Come here, come here. The water is right here, right here. Yeah. It's like, pass me the chocolate, pass me the jam. You know, it's such a casual remark, right here. Yeah. I'm seeing you all looking outside. Must be a pretty girl, is it? Right here. Right here. Now you really, please try and get right here. It's like, right here, it's like is. Being right here is nothing else. No add-on. No past, no future. Max Planck, the famous German physicist, he said way in the 50s, our consciousness creates time and space. He discovered that scientifically. Our consciousness creates time and space. Right here, you know, that we really have to get this. And of course, as soon as we think right here is here, we're stuck in geography. We're stuck in place, in space, you know. Right here transcends time, and it also transcends space. I'll just wait until you finish with this. see too many eyes. One, it's like in prison, you know. Someone walks past and the Sorry?
All clear.
All clear. Okay. So, coming back to right here. This right here is something to get very intimate with. Ask yourself, when you say, right here, am I here? What is it that you see? Right here is all. Right here is all, you know. There is nothing that is not right here at the same time, you know. That is what right here is. If, and then it goes on. If right here, so in other words, when we enter into that world of right here, by the way, another word for right here is mu. Mu. Su is another word for it. Right here, if you can reveal an activity, like if right here you can reveal an activity, we have so many activities that we do. If you can pick any activity, picking my nose, eating an apple. If you can reveal an activity, any type of activity, and see or end or see through a circumstance, it's raining. Oh, there's a car accident. Or a tree fell down. So if right here you reveal an activity, the word here, reveal an activity, reveal the whole thing. Reveal right here in any activity, reveal the whole. If right here you can reveal an activity and see through a circumstance and cut off the main crossing. It's like the crossing of our thoughts, the crossings of duality. You cut off the main crossings of that, the prison that we are in the phenomenal world that we live in, that prison of, oh my God, this and here and there's a war. The fictional world in our head, that's the crossing. So if right here we can reveal an activity and see through a circumstance and cut off the main crossing through sitting. Now sitting is just one activity. Through eating an apple, through driving, through sleeping, through having a shower, doesn't matter what the activity is. And cut off the main crossing. So if we can reveal it in any activity, you know. Thereby preventing passage to ordinary and holy. Thereby preventing clinging. Thereby preventing preferences. Thereby preventing taking sides. That's what this means, you know. That is not beyond your capability. Not beyond anyone's capability. That is what Engo is saying in his introduction. If, however, it's not like this, in other words, if you're not stuck, if you're not there yet, where you can see that. So, if you're going about, you need to be able, and even those that have broken through, you need to be able to see that all the time. You know, I always say to people when you're practicing Mu, practice Mu, okay? Go outside. And we have this story, okay? Oh, it's a nice day, Mu. Oh, I'm, you know, oh, that's a steep hill, Mu. I'm getting a bit tired, Mu. eventually it melts. Everything melts into mu. That's revealing the activity of mu. We let go of the separation of walking, of steep, of tired. We let go of that. And we melt into being. That's what this whole thing is about. So mooing, it's like, I can't moo all day long. Yes. You cannot but moo all day long. It's just a change of label. That it's the labels that confuse us, that prevent us from flicking that switch. It's all it is those labels. The story in our head. If, however, it is not yet like this, and of course a lot of us are still in that position, you know, even after Kensho, even after our claims, you know, observe well and have a look at the ancients, and now it's pointing to the case. Observe well, now it's pointing to the case. Okay, now we come to the case. Very famous, of course, you've heard this many times before. A monk asked Joshua, "The ultimate way is not difficult. It simply detests choosing." So the ultimate way is not difficult. It simply detests choosing. So I'd like to, because of the labels, we get stuck on the monk and we get stuck on Joshua. So I'd like to change the labels a little bit around. Duality asks non-duality. Okay? Duality asks non-duality. The ultimate way is not difficult. It simply detests choosing. So we'll go through that with those two characters. Instead of the monk and Joshua, it's duality. Mrs. Duality and Mrs. Non-duality. Okay. So Mrs. Duality asks Mrs. Non-duality, "The ultimate way is not difficult. It simply detests choosing." So first of all, what's important is to look at, it says the ultimate. And as you know, there are two sides. I mean, we've talked about this many times. There are two sides of the coin. There's the ultimate and there's the relative. You know? So the ultimate way, you could also say ultimately. When all is said and done, ultimately, okay, the ultimate way is not difficult. It simply detests choosing. Or you can say discriminating. Okay. So let me give you an example. I mean, I've given that example many times before, but I don't think I can give it enough. So here's a stick and here's a glass of water. So which one do I choose? So it detests choosing. Where's the choosing? Where's the not choosing? Look at the fact. The ultimate way. The fact is nothing other than the ultimate way. Look at the fact and look at the fiction. The fiction is up here, choosing. It's no such thing. I'm creating it, I'm making that all up. Oh, I'm choosing. The fact is, fact and fiction. It's like duality and non-duality. Fiction asks fact. The ultimate way is not difficult. It simply dislikes choosing. What is non-choosing? Fiction asks fact. What's the fact do? So realize the difference between fiction and fact. Fiction is like a computer game, some virtual thing that is that's going on all the time in our head. That's fiction. Okay. It's the same as trying. You know, I've made that example a few times. Try and lift that stick up. What's the fact? No, that's picking up. Try and pick it up. That's not picking it up. Try and pick it up. Trying is fiction. There's no such thing. It's something that we create in our head in order to somehow come up with something else. But there's no substance to it. So with this in mind, you know, it's hopefully it takes on a different connotation, you know. When I look at I know Scott made reference to it as well. The same thing is, of course, what is in the verses of the faith mind. When it says the great way is not difficult, this is where this is coming from. And by the way, that is used quite often in the koans. It's such a powerful teaching. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. It goes on. When love and hate are both absent. Love and hate. I mean, you might say, how can we not love? Or everything is love, you know. And here it says, when love and hate are both absent. Okay. Everything becomes clear and undisguised. And the key word is undisguised. Undisguised is fact. It's clear. Love is up here. And so is hate. But the fact is, I love you. That's the fact. I hate you. That's the fact. Dear. It'll be all right. That's the fact. When love and hate are both absent, not adding anything, not interfering at all, you know, not interfering at all, you know. Everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart, like Scott mentioned yesterday. This line here, the next line, I heard this many years ago before Zen, and it was in a book called Awareness by Molly, what was his name? Anthony de Molly, you know. I remember sharing that book with Pat, and it hit me. If you wish to see the truth, in other words, if you wish to see the fact, if you wish to see the fact, then hold no opinions for or against anything. If you wish to see the fact, don't hold any opinions for, you know, or against anything. No remainder. Nothing there at all. Just when I start off with new people in the, you know, when I give an introduction, I found over the years, and I've given many introductions, that what puts people off the most is our rituals, even though Zen has few rituals compared to other traditions, you know. And the biggest one is doing the prostration. So I always make a point now of explaining the fact, you know. Say, when you do a prostration, you know, that is just a prostration, and then we add meaning. And the meaning that we can add to a prostration is that we let go of the ego, that it is I alone, or whatever. Whatever meaning we add to it, you know, that's the meaning. But then when we do it, there is, for people, there is this, and I relate to it so much because I had that for years before I got it, and no one explained it to me. But my body was rebelling against it. I thought, oh my God, if my friends could see me doing this, they'd think I joined a Muslim thing, you know, or something. That was such a, you know, that was such a barrier. And until I realized that I was not free of my own story. I am not free of the fiction that is happening up here. I think that what I believe is true. That's not true. What's happening up here is not true. It's based on conditions. If I watch the news and tomorrow a thought comes into my head, maybe related to something I saw on the news, I haven't got a clear enough mind, but the Buddha did, believe it or not, because there's a whole book, the Abhidharma, on this, where you can trace it all back where all these thoughts are coming from. But it's all a jumble. We call it the monkey mind. Okay. But this is all a jumble that is happening up there. And through that jumble, I had an aversion of doing a prostration. Because I did not see the fact. Once I saw the fact, I was free. You know? And I could add anything. So the point I'm making at the introductory lesson or the introductory session is, if you have a problem with it, just think of it as a yoga pose. If it's a yoga pose, we don't have a problem with that. It's really good for your back. It really stretches that, muscle. And everyone does it very freely. But say you're letting go of an ego in front of a Buddha, and oh my God, all hell breaks loose inside, you know. It is like that. And yeah, this is what this is. If you want to see the truth, hold no opinions. Let go of all of that. Let go. After Mu, that is probably the next phrase that is used more often, you know, in Zen, is let go. Okay. For or against. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. Okay, so it goes on to this. Anyway, it goes on. A monk asks Joshua, the ultimate way is not difficult. It simply detests choosing. What is non-choosing? Joshua, or the non-dual world said. So the dual world asked the non-dual world, or the dual, or Mrs. Duality asked Mrs. Non-Duality, then what is not choosing? The ultimate way is not difficult. It simply detests choosing. What is not choosing? That was the question that Joshua was asked. And Joshua's reply was, above the heavens and under the heavens, I am the only one, alone and exalted. So if you look at that Buddha there on the left, that, you know, the story goes that when Buddha was born, not even when he became, you know, I mean, when he was born, the first thing he did, he put his hand up and the other hand on the ground. And he's supposed to have said this, above the heavens and under the heavens, I am the only one alone and exalted. And, you know, obviously from a dual perspective, that's like, all alarm bells start ringing here. That's a very egocentric thing to say, you know. So Mrs. Duality goes along and says, that is still choosing. Mrs. Duality, by the way, is not out of duality. So everything is choice. It's all my choice. Everything is my choice. In that world, everything is my choice. But Duality said, above the heavens and under the heavens, I am the only one alone and exalted. That's it. I am the only one alone and exalted. Now, if we wish, we can add meaning to that. But meaning is not what it's about. A prostration is not about lowering the ego or a yoga exercise. It's just notice the fiction versus the fact. Fiction, monkey mind, can be anything. I can add anything, and that drives us crazy because we think it's it. So above the heavens and under the heavens, I alone am the exalted one. Of course, this actually, in a conceptual way, also says it. You know?
Sorry.
It also says it. Above the heavens and under the heavens, I am the only one alone and exalted. There is no other. He's saying it as well. I am the only one. Above the heavens, where's heaven? Above that, whatever, wherever heaven is, below heaven, you know, or below heaven, you know. In other words, the whole. The whole. You know. And duality said, that is still choosing. That is still choosing. The monk didn't see it. Duality can't see it because it's trapped. It's trapped in choosing. And the non-duality said, you stupid bumpkin, where is the choosing? And duality was silent. Finally. Okay, so now we get to the verse. It's a lovely verse too. As deep as the sea, as hard as a mountain. So, as deep as the sea. So, as deep as the sea refers to, you know, the world of non-duality. As deep as the sea, like the ocean is so deep. As hard as a mountain. So, there's nothing harder. What's the hardest thing that we can think of? You know, in his Teisho, Yamada Roshi says, a diamond. You know, but we can crush a diamond. But the hardest thing, you know, is non-duality or emptiness. We have many names for this. You know, let not get stuck on names. Emptiness, nothingness, the essential world. It's the hardest thing. It cannot be killed, that world. You cannot kill emptiness. You cannot destroy it. You know, it's the hardest of all. You could also say it's the softest. But these are words, you know. So here, he said, as hard as a mountain. So emptiness also, and this is quite interesting. It always got me because I thought everyone is in Buddhism very often talks about impermanence. So conditioned existence is impermanent. We all understand that. Conditioned, whatever is conditioned, falls, eventually dies, and then becomes something else. So if water all of a sudden becomes an orange, or is incorporated into an orange together with whatever, you know, everything becomes something else. Everything is impermanent. You know. But when we look at it from the point of view of emptiness, emptiness is permanent. And the way the Buddha described it is the only thing, these are his words, the only thing that is unconditioned is nirvana. And that is just another word for emptiness. The only thing that is unconditioned is nirvana. So that world, right here, like that, when we enter that world, when we can see that, when we let go of duality, right here, you know, then all of a sudden we can take refuge there. Taking refuge in the Buddha, you know, in the Dharma, and in the Sangha, in all, you know, we can take refuge in that. And all of a sudden, you know, especially when we take refuge there, those two hands, they meet, you know, just they meet. So again, he says, as deep as the sea and as hard as a mountain, mosquitoes and gnats play with the fierce wind of emptiness. What I love about this is that he uses the word play. Yeah. Mosquitoes and gnats play with the fierce wind of emptiness. That's just beautiful. Mosquitoes and gnats play with the fierce wind of emptiness. That door, the wind goes, shoop, the door goes up, open, and then the next minute, shoop, it closes. The tree, whack, falls down. Oh, I wish I could get moved. Why can't I get moved? Mosquitoes and gnats play with the fierce wind of emptiness. I got to drive to work. Oh, why are you in my way? Get away, you know. The great activity is nothing but a play. You know, it's lovely. The mosquitoes and gnats play with the fierce wind of emptiness. Ants and termites shake the iron pillar. Oh, I don't want it to be like that. Oh, please, God. Oh, please, God. Please let me make that promotion. Please. The iron pillar is unshakable. Emptiness is unshakable. You can't destroy it. You know, this was in the days before Zen. That was always one thing that got me. God wants everyone to be happy and do everything. He's all powerful. Why is there a war? Why not? And then people, please let the war stop. Please let the war stop. Or please don't let that person die. Or let it get better. All of this is ants and termites shake the iron pillar. While we are separated, it's like there's this. We feel like, it's not going my way. That's what it is, ultimately. We haven't let go. We are living in a fictional world. We are trapped in the fictional world. We haven't seen the fact. If we see the fact, there's just dying. Not even that. There's just dying is up here. It's just distinguish between fiction and fact. Ants and termites shake the iron pillar. It is like that. A little tiny ant is trying to shake it. And it's like us trying to shake the firmament itself. Picking and choosing, it goes on, a cloth drum hanging under the eaves. So picking and choosing, duality. Then it says a cloth drum makes no sound. A cloth drum. So picking and choosing is nothing other than a cloth drum hanging under the eaves. It's nothing other than non-duality. Picking and choosing is nothing but being right here. Being right here is picking and choosing. We play with it all day long. We are it, picking and choosing. Oh, I really like that water. It's really refreshing. I'll have that. I don't like the sweet stuff. I'd rather have this. Picking and choosing is nothing other than all of this. A cloth drum hanging under the eaves. In his Taisho, Yamada Roshi, Koan Roshi, he links the cloth drum to silence, like a cloth drum. Nothing other than silence. You know. So silence here is not the absence of noise, but it's the depth of the ocean. But you still have the waves going on, like silence. All silence. All silence.